We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
I will give you a quarantine update on for me. I only left the house on Sunday afternoon to run to my local gas station to stock up on cigarettes and other snacks and sundries. And I was gloved. I didn't take a picture. I almost did, but maybe next time. But we're in good shape, so I don't know when I'll leave the house again. But mask, gloves, of course. Extensive cleaning when I got home. But what stunned me, this was like, holy shit, dude. Like, the gas station was operating like nothing, like there was nothing. It was like going back in time to 6 weeks ago. It was like, do you realize it's like the kid was just standing there at the counter with no protective equipment. You know, and this place has gotten in trouble for, this is how fucking crazy this is, Tyler. This place has gotten in trouble for selling cigarettes to minors. So they have to, like, take your ID and scan it. Now, I don't know if they've changed the policy for safety's sake, but based on the way the kid was dressed and everything, I almost think that that's not the case. But yeah. It's just like, this kid is standing here for 8 hours, and people are coming in. God help him if he's got this thing, because he's holding all their licenses and taking all their merchandise and scanning it or whatever. So it's like, Jesus. I felt like saying, dude, shouldn't you wear some gear? But I think one of the kids, I had said that a few weeks ago. I'm like, you're going to get gloves and shit, dude? And he's like, the gloves, if I get it on my gloves, I'm just going to get it on everything then. So it was like, I don't know. I'm not going to stand here and argue with you gas station attendants about, you know, about viruses and shit. Maybe he's right. But still, it's like, I wouldn't want to be barehanded. Honestly, if I had that job, I probably would be in a mask with a fucking box of gloves. And every customer that came in, I'd put on a new pair of gloves and throw out the old pair that I was wearing, you know, when the previous customer came in. But, you know, I'd probably actually just quit the job because it sounds insane to work in, like, you know, such a high foot traffic sort of job.
You probably wouldn't have to quit, Tim. They'd probably terminate you. So, but you're right. If you go through the math, how many customers does that person encounter each day? And it's a pretty good number. And so eventually your luck isn't going to hold anymore.
Right.
I've noticed.
And you talk about social distancing. This was like, dude, I was like 2 feet. There was like a little counter between us. And I'm just like, dude, you're really flouting all advice here. you are really, you know, you've just thrown all caution to the wind, brother. Like, I would speak up if I were you.
And for minimum wage, probably, you know. So
yeah, or not much more than that, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I noticed that I go to Safeway. It's close to where I live. And they have instituted some control measures. Like, they have mapped out where the carts, where you should stand with your cart so that they maintain a 6-foot distance.
Yeah, yeah.
And they also told us you cannot bring in your own bags anymore. They don't allow that.
Right. They ban those here too, yeah.
Yeah, so they're getting information from CDC. But the person who's manning the register, I don't think she had gloves on. She certainly didn't have a face mask or anything. So maybe this week with the new idea of face masks, maybe they will.
With the new guidance, yeah.
Maybe the employees will. But, you know, they've taken some steps, but they're not behind the screen like you described, the plexiglass screen.
Yeah, they got that in my town now, so.
I think that'd be wise.
I fully expected the kid to be behind one of those when I went into the gas station. I'm like, oh, they probably put up a wall for this kid now by the time I get in there. And it's like, whoa, this is like back to the future here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me ask you a question. If you had a son, would you let him work at that place?
No way.
No, neither would I.
No.
And so I don't know. I mean, maybe this is a giant chain, and so there's only management, but that they don't own the place. But either owner, manager, or just manager, I think that it would prey upon your mind at night that I didn't take steps to protect this person that could have been pretty easy, and I didn't do
it.
We're just not seeing it, in my view, enough of that. And, you know, I hope that more people get the idea that, geez, this is on me. You know, the federal government is going to come in here and save me. It's on me. I've got to do what I can do. So
right. Not just
there we
save
are.
The kid, but if you're the manager of that place or the company that owns it, like, you should, you know, realize that you have a responsibility to all the people that come in. I was wearing gloves and a mask, but like when I was in there, I think two people came in that were just like the kid, that were completely unprotected. So it's like if the kid gets it, he could be giving it to every knucklehead that comes in here that isn't that thinks this isn't a big deal, and thus we can't get rid of this thing.
And thus there we go. I mean, it's we're all in one sense we are literally all in the same boat, okay. And so if one doesn't get the message, that's all it takes. It just continues to reverberate. So we're in a tough position here that we need good compliance. We're having a tough time getting good compliance across the board. I guess that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's getting hairy. It's getting hairy here. Go ahead. That's what I was going to start talking about. But, yeah, what do you think?
I think the next few days a lot more people will get religion because there really will be, unfortunately, more people dying and dying faster. And I think for the first time we may hear stories of the hospital people basically were totally overwhelmed. There were no ventilators. And so they just – put the person in a sedation and rolled them out in the hallway and let them fade
away.
That's the worst case scenario. This is what happens when you overrun the capacity of your medical system to help people. And just understand, I think people need to understand that ventilators are not a magic mechanism to save your life.
Cuomo said it. He kind of explained it where it's like once you're on the ventilator, like the longer you're on it, the like more likely you are you're not going to get off of it. You know, you're going to die.
Yes. And so at best case scenario, it's like 50-50. So you can't, you know, we want the ventilators, you know, we want them to try to save the maximum number of people, but not everybody is going to be saved even if we have plenty of ventilators. We're just in a bad state.
Right.
But I guarantee you, if they get to the point where the emergency people have to triage you in the hallway and basically say, no ventilator, we'll just sedate them and let nature take its course, we're really going to be in a sorry state. And this is what Governor Cuomo is trying to avoid. This is what other places are trying to avoid. It's all we can do right now.
Right. It's terrifying because, you know, last week was – sort of at the beginning of the week, they said, oh, it's going to be a tough 2 weeks. Well, we're kind of getting ready to start, like, sort of the second half of this long stretch, if not, like, the second third. So, as I said, unless they can wake up tomorrow and they're like, oh, it turns out if you drink a full can of Dr. Pepper, it goes away. It's like, there ain't no getting out of the next few days, man. It's going to be a living nightmare. It's going to be an absolute living nightmare.
You're right. If you people are going to probably develop a new faith, but if you read the Bible, in there is a statement that with great knowledge comes great sadness, depending on which version of the Bible you read. And this is where we are now, is that we see the numbers, the leap up of cases, and we know damn well that following on that, a week, 2 weeks later, are going to be a lot of deaths. And people who are chugging along okay, I've got COVID, but I'm doing okay, are suddenly not going to be doing okay.
Yeah.
This is where we are. And we know that. is coming. We know it.
This is why people say the show's depressing, but they're
well,
we're trying to fucking be honest with people here, at least, you know, that this is you know, there's a certain there's a gallows humor to it in a sense. I try to at least bring that and I mean, I'm genuinely frightened. There's a part of me, I told you this before we went on the air, that's like, there's a good part of me, you know, everybody who listens to the show knows I'm a pretty heavy smoker. It's like, shit, if I get this thing, I could be fucked. You know, I could fucking die from this just because I've abused my body so badly over the last 40-some-odd years. You know, I'm not a, I'm no spring chicken. So it's worrisome. You know, I'm genuinely worried, folks. If you go to the gym every day and you're all right, and you know, even you could, you know, not you, Tyler. I mean, like your average super fit person.
Yes.
You know, super fit person. They could get it, and they could get something. Something could go wrong with them. It's, you have no idea.
We're wondering. People are asking. Is there maybe a genetic sort of constitution that's more susceptible than another? And we know that it, as many agents, it loves certain situations like diabetes and heart issues and that kind of thing. But one of the things you have to keep in mind is if you look at the total burden of patients, a lot of them are relatively young, middle-aged and younger. And what we have is the sort of like random chance that the virus doesn't kill all that many, or it kills mostly at the upper end of the lifespan, but you have so many younger people who are active and out there and doing things and getting infected that you have a lot more of them ending up dead just by virtue of the total disease burden in that sort of age bracket. So this thing can get you, and it can get
you
unexpectedly. It doesn't. We wish we knew how it did. And so people are actually going to probably do the genome-wide association studies and try to figure out, like, is there a genetic marker that's linked? What I can tell you right now is there will be. There will be several, and these people will go absolutely stark raving mad trying to figure out which one is significant. Because if you look at enough markers, you will find correlations. You will find correlations. Then you have to go back and validate those. And so it's going to be a long haul before we figure that one out. And just like always, not in time to really help anybody this time.
Yeah. It's troublesome. It certainly is. We hope for the best, though. Maybe that warm weather thing will work out. You know, we need some kind of I wouldn't call it a miracle, as the president said, but we need some kind of change in the circumstances here, maybe that would benefit us somehow. But it's
it could be. You might be onto something that typically, if it's influenza, here we go, we're going to extrapolate again. And the last stars drop down with the onset of warm weather. That might give us some breathing room to be ready, because this could just be the herald wave for a disaster in the fall if we don't take steps. And what we'll have to do is get ventilators, get stocked up, you know, get the supplies, find out if any of these drugs work, make a lot of those if they do. We can't stop our effort because it dies down in the summer, because it could come roaring back. We also need to be on guard, that we need to have a really good public health surveillance system, so when the first COVID cases pop up, we see them. We see them right away and start to, you know, get the ball rolling so we don't get caught twice. But maybe, you know, we can pray for that. More sunshine, warm weather, you know, and save us through that. Save us through summer.
Yeah, you know. We gotta pin our hopes on something, right, at this point.
Yeah. And that's a reasonable hope. I think we can usually assume that most of these diseases do die down. A lot of diseases have seasonal sorts of preferences, when I call it that, that we never really quite pin down. But influenza and common cold, they uh, they're always out there cooking a little bit, but they become hyper endemic in the winter. Actually, influenza causes true epidemics. Back in the day, influenza used to be, in the modern era, the only infectious disease agent that could spike the U.S. death rate. It now has a competitor.
Jesus.
You could just look at the demographics, the actuarial table, and the actuaries would be able to tell you, oh yeah, here's when the epidemic was, because see, all these deaths leaped up.
Yeah.
And it was the only one. Now we got SARS.
SARS-2, the new coronavirus.
SARS-2,
novel
yes,
coronavirus.
Right.
Yeah.
You are right, Professor.
I just call it the coronavirus. I don't care for any other name. Coronavirus is the most. I don't like COVID-19. I'm not a fan of COVID-19. Who is a fan of COVID-19?
Well, this is the system that we use. COVID is the designation for the disease.
No, I know. We talked about this. Yeah.
Yeah. But we name the disease. Sometimes searching for an etiology. This time we had them both at the same time, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's confusing. I like to.
It is.
I don't talk to many people. Well, I talk to people on the phone, but I don't like. If I was out and about more, I would have a lot more use for this. But if you people listening, if you want to really get under the skin of one of your loved ones, you can be like, you don't even know the difference between coronavirus and COVID-19, because they probably don't. But thanks to talking to you all this time, I know that. The coronavirus is what causes the COVID-19. So
there you go.
Yeah. So there's your at home bar trick to try on your loved one is stump them with that. You just say, hey, you probably don't even know the difference between coronavirus and COVID-19. You know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. That'll
oh, man.
Going for people who are sheltering together. Yes, good idea, Sam.
Yeah, that'll make for a fun evening. That's the.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, it's interesting. I have a friend who's concerned about people snitching on each other and not social distance shaming and things of that nature. I'm not too worried about that, but it's an interesting idea. My attitude is that, like, I'm on super bubble boy status. So to me, I don't even see people who aren't social distancing, and I wouldn't like shame them. But apparently, that's a thing, of course, because shaming people is like one of America's favorite things to do. So I can see how shaming people like that. But at the same time, in my opinion, it's like. It all depends on the situation, because people shouldn't be outright flouting the idea that you shouldn't be, gathering in large groups. But if somebody just like goes out for a walk, it's like that's perfectly fine. They can go out for a walk, or a family can go out for a walk. You don't get on their case about it.
Yes. The back in the day when my dad was a little kid, they got quarantined for diphtheria. And what they used to do in those situations is they would put a sign on the house. The public health authorities would put a sign designating quarantine. And what they relied on was people in the community to report. For example, like if my grandfather, he brought food and left it on the porch, which he could do. But if he crossed the threshold and went inside, he had to stay.
They'd report you.
And what they relied on was the neighbors to keep an eye out and report anybody who was violating the quarantine. Because
my friend wouldn't like that at all.
This is all there was back in that day. They didn't have very many therapeutic options. So, you know, the other thing people have forgotten is when we look at the Diamond Princess and other cruise ships, quarantine is not to protect the people who are quarantined. Their fate is whatever their fate is. The quarantine is to protect the rest of the people.
Yeah.
That's a cruel thing to say and to experience, but that's what it was about is, you know, nature would take its course, the requisite time would go past, and the disease would be over, and those people could then come back out, whoever was still alive. So these are really terrible situations. We've got cruise ships looking for ports, having trouble finding them, you know.
Yeah, that's scary too. Again, another little, you know, another little side tributary. That's like, what about all those people on cruise ships? What about all the people in jails? What about all the kids on the borders? There's a lot of. Has anyone checked on the Amish?
Yeah. These are interesting questions. The cruise ship, the way that. Oh, I can't remember if this was an official Coast Guard communication, but the idea was that, well, you know, you're not flagged in the U.S. We don't have a responsibility to take care of your passengers. So you need to go to the Bahamas or whoever, you know, you're operating under the auspices of. So
and
this,
yet they're giving them
really,
a buyout and get their, and yet they're bailing them out. That's what drives me nuts.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's ridiculous.
I also will tell you that some of those cruise ships left well after it was clear there was a coronavirus problem, and nobody quite knew where it was. But again, you know, this is one of those things that you can't make any money if you don't sail. So they're, you know, they're trapped in a way.
I suppose.
Yeah. Some of those, as I understand it, some of the cruise ships are basically without passengers, but the crew is riding out a quarantine period.
The crew's like 1,000 people at least, so it's not small potatoes.
No. So hopefully they're doing okay, but it's a tough situation. I wouldn't want to be out at sea and not be able to. Well, anyway, there we have it. It's
going
to be.
Now
crazy.
I want to update on a couple of interesting numbers here from that have come up as we talked on the show over the last few weeks. Now, I don't have it in front of me. I wish I had. I want to say when we talked about Russia like 2 weeks ago, they were only like 200 cases. And now they're at 4,000 cases with 34 deaths confirmed. So they're at about the size of a – let me see. I can do a compare and contrast. What did I say? They're at about 4,000 cases. So they're like at what like Connecticut and Colorado are at right now, but with far less deaths. So, you know,
and
a medium-sized U.S. state. Yeah, and they've instituted an, I think I would love to know. I would wish someone would look this up. Like, who – are we, like, the only country left? I know Mexico is pretty laissez-faire about this so far, from what I understand. I guess the president of Mexico was out hanging out with El Chapo's mom or some shit, which is like, what? I don't even know what that's about. But – For real. That was the story.
Yeah.
And he was just hanging out and at a family dinner with them and had no protective anything. So it was like they don't seem to care at all down there. And I don't think they even have that many cases from what I can gather. I haven't even looked into that. But also Brazil. Have you been following Brazil?
Yes. Yeah, what a mess. You got a president.
Yeah, they are super like the president there is like acting kind of like how Trump did a few weeks ago, where he's like, this is no big deal at all. It's just the flu. Everyone's being panicky. Stop it. And it's like, uh-oh, man, this is
– yeah.
This could turn ugly down there.
Let me tell you, one of the things that you would want to avoid at any price, if you at all possibly could, would be to unleash an agent like this new coronavirus into one of the mega cities like Mexico City or Sao Paulo and just have it do whatever it wanted to do. I can't imagine a worse situation. And it's just
isn't that that's the thing that makes me wonder, like, is it already there? Because, like, when we talked about this at the very beginning of this series, we talked about, are they even testing in these places? Are they even testing in Brazil? Are they even testing in Mexico? Or is it like, they just barely started testing in Florida. So I can't imagine they have even the even remotely the testing that we have here, and our testing sucks. So it's like there you could wake up tomorrow and find that they have a full-blown panic on their hands, kind of like what we had happen to us at the beginning of last month.
Well, one thing that's quite true is if you don't test, you don't have any cases. So everything's
right.
Fine. And then what will happen is all of a sudden people will become seriously ill, lots of them, and some of them will die. And like you say, I don't know how they're going to get out of that one if this really comes to pass. So you kind of hope that maybe, you know, each country, each environment is different. The people are different. We can't necessarily equate them, but I would be beside myself with worry if I was the leader of a nation with these megapolises that could have stuff get loose and we couldn't possibly even track it, let alone control it. You know, so
right.
Jeez,
it's worrsome. It is worrisome. I got this here for you now. The numbers in Mexico are 1,500 confirmed. So about – I did do that. I can't keep track of all this. That was 4,000. I can't keep track of – yeah, so they have 1,500 in Mexico and 50
do you know where
deaths. No,
is
it's
it
just the whole nation here. I can't expand on this. I have no idea. But they have 1,500, which is comparable to Nevada and Alabama. So it's actually right on the line of Alabama and Nevada. So if people are wondering,
the first thing that would come to my mind is, if all those cases were in the federal district, a lot of tourists come in there, obviously, but Cancun, Acapulco. Those sorts of places might have very heavy outbreaks already, and you get a lot of travel between the states.
Spring break.
In Mexico. Yes, exactly, Tim. And so it's a very popular place for Americans to go. And in particular, we're just getting out of the really heavy winter season down there. So I would be amazed if it didn't start in some of the bigger tourist areas that have high traffic and cruise ships and then travel up to Mexico City in very short order. So, I mean, the first place you want to go if you go to Mexico City is you want to see Teotihuacan. And I can imagine that probably draws many, many thousands of people from across the world. It's got to be there.
It. That throws back to what I was saying when we first started this conversation. I never got around to finishing that point, but that it was like, I always assumed the number was like 100-something thousand because they hadn't tested anybody yet. And if a basketball player can give it to a little kid, giving them an autograph, then this thing must be way, like, insanely widespread, and which is what we're finding out now.
And it's insanely sneaky, and so you can't tell. This is the problem. You have to worry if you're President Obrador. Maybe what you don't want to do is say anything that scares away tourists, trying to hope that it doesn't hit you, can't see it yet, and finding out the hard way that wasn't a good policy. And I think, honestly, it's quite likely they might. But again, maybe, warm weather, humidity, maybe those things have cut down on the transmission rate. I think at this point, rather than crossing my fingers and hoping, I'd hope for a more active approach. But who knows? Maybe they're right, and I'm wrong.
Yeah, this whole thing is going to wind up being a lesson for a lot of historians and scientists for a generation or two. How different countries handled this and how it all evolved. Now, I got confused there looking at the numbers because I had a different little box up here on my screen. Now, this one, I got two thoughts. First, I never thought I'd say this, but maybe Donald Trump is a genius. And second, we need to get a boat or something, Tyler, to get here. Because Greenland, dude, is still a tiny, tiny, tiny little dot And when you click on it, it is, they only have 10 cases in Greenland. That's it. 10 cases,
okay.
No deaths, three recovered, seven active. Now, of course, like we said, they haven't done, I assume they haven't done very much testing if they only have 10 people, but that's still, that's wild. Reykjavik isn't exactly a tiny community.
How many do they have? Can you see that? Reykjavik?
Oh, that's Iceland, actually. I stand corrected.
Yes.
That's Iceland.
Yes.
So, my bad. Now you know why I'm not charge of... Iceland has 1,300, so they're
okay.
Kind of in line with some of these other places. Iceland has 1,300. Mexico has 1,500. Yeah, so it's kind of about the same as Mexico. So just Greenland. We just got to get to Greenland. I don't even know how many people live there, but more than 10.
Well, there's
so.
There are military bases at Thule, and I'm going to guess that people cycle in and out. But maybe, you know, maybe they've put a halt to that because of the COVID situation right now. So they're slowing down.
Yeah.
But
they wouldn't let us in
yeah.
if we tried to get there in there anyway.
Well, they wouldn't know we were there. We'd just sneak in and show up.
You know? It is rather sizable. We could probably, if we got a boat, we could probably get to, you know, there's quite a huge shoreline of Greenland if we could just.
Oh.
We'd have to live
yeah.
off the grid. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think most of that place there is no grid, so that wouldn't be a problem. But I've only
they
I've
do the work for us. That's great. No,
I've
I'm not either.
I've only seen it from the air. That's as close as I've ever gotten, and I don't know that I'll ever get there. But Iceland, they have a big tourist industry, and they have to be very concerned about what happens when the big crunch because. I think obviously their biggest season is in the warm weather months, or actually what they call warm weather. To me, it was like winter there in July.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to die. But anyway.
And one more number update. We were talking about Brazil. They have approximately 9,000 cases with 363 deaths, which is like about comparable, really comparable to Louisiana. So that should tell you, I mean,
okay.
And that kind of is in line with what you kind of expect. It's about Louisiana-sized country or something like that, I think.
Well,
I don't know
got,
if that makes sense. Not like I think that population-wise, it's sort of, I think. I have no idea.
It's, okay.
It just has the same feel. It's a party. It's a party city. I guess that's kind of what's in my head. You go, like, the Mardi Gras... You know, isn't like the Mardi Gras and all that. So maybe
well,
that's the connection I'm making in my head.
They have Rio has the carnival.
That there you go. Yes, exactly. Thank you. You bailed me out.
But what's interesting is if you look at Brazil in particular, it is tropical. You know, it sort of basically straddles the equator and. You're looking at the southern hemisphere is the seasons are opposite. And typically what happens is stuff like influenza comes and goes sort of in the opposite sort of time sense as it does in the northern hemisphere. So as
yeah.
they get deeper into the winter months, they might see in the southern parts of South America, for example, a surge in infections. And so we've got them. You know, we don't exactly know where, but
yeah.
the best is yet to come in terms of when that virus likes to circulate in the southern hemisphere. So it's
that's
it's just,
true. Yeah, there could, yeah. like you said before, the warm weather in some of these countries may have a hand in maybe it not
may.
Being as prevalent. We just don't know. We just that's you know.
We don't know.
We just don't know.
We're equating things. You know, we assume that everybody's roughly the same, but, you know, the age demographic, the basic health of the population. In the U.S.,
right.
we have quite a number of people who are overweight and obese, and that is not a good situation if you get this
yeah,
virus
thanks,
or something
thanks,
like
thanks
it.
For reminding me, Tyler. Now, we got another caller on the line, so let's do the caller here because We're one and one so far, I think, for quality callers. So let's see what 716 has to say. 716, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing? I'm appreciating the conversation. You know, a friend of mine was talking about we get no good news, and is there any glimmer of hope? And I wonder if there would be any commentary that you all might know about with two clinical trials that are going on. One is old school. I'm told it was developed in the 1800s and was used in the 1918 flu pandemic, where they extracted serum antibodies from people who had recovered and used those to boost the immunity of people who had the disease. The second one that I know is a legit clinical trial is with, I think, which was an arthritis drug called, I can hardly pronounce it, it was sarilumab Regeneron. It comes out of Tarrytown, and it's being tested at Roswell Park Cancer Institute here in Buffalo, which is a qualified research institute. So one drug and one serum procedure with antibodies is being tested in earnest. We don't know, you know, if it's going to have any effectiveness, but at least
right.
There's some potential there to either decrease symptoms or shorten the duration of the symptoms. And so I'll listen to the discussion offline. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. All right, Tyler. I've never had a caller who asks the question and leaves. I really appreciate that caller.
Okay.
It's always awkward. It's always awkward just to break the fourth wall. It's always. I never know when and how to show the caller the door. So I appreciate that. So I think you sent me a link about a story about the antibodies, people and antibodies.
Yes.
I don't know if that's
yes.
in line with what the caller. He never gave his name.
No, it is.
Fire away. Let us know what that's about.
So he's talking about taking the serum plasma from people who have survived an infection with coronavirus and basically perfusing that into other patients who are severely ill. And it does have promise. It does seem to have brought back people who were really, really, really seriously hurt of being hurt by the infection. And so people are pretty excited that, you know, maybe this will be something we can do now in the near term. It's like a blood transfusion, only it's just basically antibodies. And you have to match it with the patient. But, yes, this is a reworking of an old idea. Von Behring and Wernicke came up with the first sort of process, which they
It sounds kind of like some kind of weird, like, workaround of a vaccine almost, where it's like instead
of it is. You're absolutely
tricking the body
it
into making the antibodies, you just stick the antibodies in and cut out the middleman almost.
Absolutely correct. And so now the person that gets the perfusion, gets the antibodies from someone else, basically has immunity. This is passive immunization. And so it's as if they're immune. They are not immune in the sense that the person that donated the antibodies is. So they'll be okay for a few months. But if a new vaccine comes up, that person will need it because they're not permanently immune. But you're absolutely right. This is sort of a strange cutting out the middleman approach. So, I think 100 plus years ago, late 1800s, this was used as a successful way to fight off diphtheria. Because diphtheria kills with a toxin, and the patients who survive sometimes could produce antibodies. Anyway, if you have the a diphtheria antitoxin, you can salvage patients who otherwise wouldn't make it. Now, that one peculiarity of the diphtheria toxin that I forgot about is when a patient survives, they have to be vaccinated because the toxin kills at such a low level they don't even mount a response to it. So the original technique is a little different than what's being done here. But, it has – people are excited that this might actually do something for us. So this idea of passive immunization is a mainstay of medicine right now. We use it all the time. And so we have a hyperimmune serum that you can give to a patient who's been attacked by a mad dog to try to prevent rabies. You also vaccinate at the same time, but we use it against measles, chicken pox. We have a thing called Verazig. We can Gamma Guard. It goes by that name. For against measles, mm-hmm. It's called Bagam. So we have all these things. Tetanus, another one. And we're using antibodies. We put in antibodies in the patients to treat a variety of things like Crohn's disease and irritable bowel syndrome, where they're just chronically plagued by this.
You told me about that.
Yeah, those are monoclonal antibodies. You see it advertised on television all the time. And the way to recognize a monoclonal antibody is the name ends, the generic name ends in MAB, N-A-B for monoclonal antibody. But you'll be impressed at how often we use this strategy. So it's really got everybody's, I shouldn't say everybody, but at least it's something that looks good, gave us a positive
it's promising.
Result.
It's promising.
Well, and the other thing is that now that we know that it can bring back people from near death, maybe the thing to do is when folks are hospitalized is give them the serum right now, give them the plasma right now, and prevent them from having to go to a ventilator stage. So, they're doing – that's one thing. There's another oldie idea out there, and that is a TB vaccine, tuberculosis vaccine,
mm-hmm.
that they call BCG, which is basically in honor of the people that found it. And what people have noticed is with BCG, it kind of ramps up the general immune system, gets it kind of angry, and it does sometimes protect against an array of agents. And so they're trying to think, maybe we could use that to kind of boost you before this thing finds you. But that has to be looked at.
Right.
So,
the problem is that, like, that would be awesome, but it's already found a whole shitload of people, and it's still on the loose finding more people, and I can't get out of the store tomorrow and get this TV thing. So time is not on our side. I hate to be the negative Nancy of this. Now, what about the caller's other question about some arthritis drug that he couldn't say the name of? Did you understand any of that? Okay, good.
I know that lots of candidates' leads are being looked at, and I hadn't seen that one about an anti-arthritis agent in particular, but probably. If it has any kind of reasonable hope, they'll give it a try. I should see if I can find that because now I'm curious about it. But anyway, there are things going on. People are even trying to use stem cells and get those guys all charged up and then put them back into the body. Natural killer cells is what they're going for to try to fight this off at the cellular level. So. We've got Moderna trying a messenger RNA approach. We've got several different things happening. We won't be totally, helpless forever. But for now, social distancing. Break the chain.
Yeah.
We really need to do that.
I've been drinking a can of Dr. Pepper every night. So
you think that works? So far, it's worked, right?
So far, so good. So far, so good.
So you may be onto something.
I doubt it. Well, it's hard to see into the future. We're at the end of the, we got about 15 minutes left. So I don't want to necessarily commit to doing another show next week. I feel like I'll probably want to. Maybe we'll take it to 5 shows and take a break and maybe intersperse some paranormal stuff because maybe people want a little change of pace. But we'll see. I figure Tyler says he's down for anything, right?
Yeah, you just I'm not going anywhere. So.
Yeah, and this is like 6 o'clock at night for you or 8 o'clock or whatever by the time we finish. So it's not like it's eating into your night. We'll see. Because going into tonight's show, we're gonna break the fourth wall a little bit. It was like you and I talked about this before on email or whatever. But it's just becoming It's kind of a drag, man. I think everybody feels that. This is a drag. But there's a part of me too that's like thinking to myself, I may need to be there next Friday night, you know.
Okay.
Because this is going to be an awful, awful week, I think. And maybe people will need, if anything, I hope tonight we were a little more lighthearted. At least I was. I tried to loosen up a little bit for the people listening at home. A little less dire than when I talk privately to people when I'm like, oh, we're really fucked, man. It's impossible to say. Well, here's a ray of sunshine I wanted to mention. This was like a couple days ago. I haven't heard anything to contradict it. Let me see if I can get a visualized graph on here. But my understanding was that Italy looks like it hit the curve. Do you know anything about that? Do you have any insights on that?
It does indeed, in terms of deaths anyway. It looks like they're maybe on the downward slide now, which is kind of what the models have been predicting, that we'll see a peak and then a relatively fast decline. Well, remember, they've done much stricter social isolation controls enforced by law enforcement. So, we may be seeing finally the fruits of that. It will take time for those efforts to have effect. But, yeah, maybe. We're hoping. We're hoping that it holds.
I'm looking at it now.
With diagnosis, you're always limited by diagnosis. And but deaths are a pretty good indicator of, assuming that we get those reported promptly, of where we are in this process. And that's what you follow now. Because the total diagnosis by testing is not showing us the full scope of the problem. And what we really worry about is the fatal cases and hospitalizations. So, but yes, it does look like they have maybe come out of the deep woods. Now, that said, you also have to remember they're in for a long haul of decay of deaths. And there's going to be a lot of mayhem yet to come. We have to hope and pray that the medical professionals themselves don't get heavily sick by running out of equipment, but also don't become exhausted. And if you can imagine what it must be like to just work under these circumstances, you know, we're burned out, we're tired of it. Think what those people are going through with the additional worry of bringing it home with them. So that sort of stress will take a toll. And we hope that these people can hold up. So that's all we can do is hope.
Absolutely, yeah. There are going to be a lot of people after this that are going to be really scarred with PTSD. I feel like the whole, you know, the folks on the front lines, of course, to a terrible degree, but it's almost like the whole nation's going to have this PTSD after this. I don't think people are starting to kind of say that there'll be no, you know, we can't go back to normal. There is no, we can't go back to, unless you go to the gas station by my house, you cannot go back to normal. Maybe those plexiglass barriers protecting the kid at the gas, at the grocery store, maybe they're forever now.
Yes.
We may have to keep, I mean, I hope that's not the case, but the social distancing thing is so anathematic. I don't know if that's even the right word, but, you know, to the human condition that, you know, it's worrisome. So
you hope
that we can kind of get back to a time when you can go up to a girl at a bar and buy her a drink without violating eight different social constructs here. Or even just, to see somebody and shake their hand. It's like, it's madness. Are we all going to keep away from each other forever? Or that's frightening almost.
No, for the near term, and by that I mean for the summer season into fall, we'll probably have our guard up with good reason. We have to be alert for a rebound. And, you know, I think we were talking earlier, again, we're not safe anywhere until this virus is under control everywhere.
Right.
So we're just going to have to get ready for it. It could come back and get the fire brigade out quicker this time, you know.
Yeah.
Learn from experience, as you said, and go forward. But, yeah, socially, it's going to be awkward for a while, Tim. Maybe one day we'll all get our antibody tests and we'll have a little certificate of immunity, and you can show that to somebody at the bar.
Yeah, but it'll always be, I think this will be like the boogeyman effect, where it'll always be like, well, you never know what could come. I think we'll always be weary, for a generation at least, you know, of whatever, another thing, this could happen again, another pandemic could happen, so we have to be very, and again, maybe that's not a bad idea. Maybe if we had been on our guard that much going into this, it wouldn't have been so bad. But I think what's really for me, go ahead, Tyler.
No, it's really difficult to know that if we had been more alert, that it could have really changed the pandemic. I don't think we could have stopped the pandemic. We might have been able to be more aggressive and recognizing, like, oh my God, this is a beast. We gotta do social distancing right now. And possibly that we would have done better. But the most frustrating thing will unlikely, I shouldn't say unlikely. The most frustrating thing will be that we have another pandemic with the same goddamn agent. And that can happen if we allow it to rebound and we're not diligent about how to.
What do you mean, the same agent? Like just the coronavirus would rebloom, if you will?
Yes. And so if we're not careful, if we let people go back to normal too quickly, or we're not alert to sudden surges of cases and not reacting to them properly. I mean, nobody's going to want to put social distancing back in place once we take it down, but that might be exactly what we have to do. And if we don't and let time pass again, we're going to be sorry again.
Yeah, so, that's what I've heard too, that like that we'll go down from the curve and they'll loosen the restrictions and then they'll have to tighten them back up again because it'll pop back up a little bit smaller. But
what I heard,
God willing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we need the relaxation to happen. We can't sit there with people unemployed like this for forever.
Forever.
At some point, we've got to come back to work.
Yeah.
But what I understand is that, and again, reticent to accept everything that comes out of China, is that one of their problems is reimportation. Got it under control, locked up the country, and I mean they locked up the country. It was more than one province and one big city.
Yeah.
But anyway, and what happened? People traveling in from outside bring it right back in, and there you are. It, you know, the spark starts another forest fire, and that can be us very quickly. We're not safe until it is controlled everywhere.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I made a couple of points here before we wrap it up. The thing about going up to a girl and buying her a drink at the bar is sort of in comparison to, in a sense, where it's like it really hit me where you don't – the social distancing thing is just so foreign in a way. Like you don't realize until you've seen it in action by the third week here or so that the people are just naturally congregate and to live in a world where, you know, they don't have audiences for TV shows or they don't have sporting events because of the, you know what I mean? It's like without that gathering, without the gathering of people, it's a very lonely existence. Everybody's alone, you know, it's very depressing. People acknowledge that, accept it, realize that someday we'll all gather again and it'll be okay. Hopefully this can't last forever. And you know, hold on to that. Cause to me, that gets me down. You know, I'm a big sports fan. I watch a lot of TV. So, the lack of crowds has been noticeable to me. and even like newscasters, they have to sit like super far apart, or they do the show from their home basement. Everyone's trying to copy Benal, Tyler. They're all doing their show from their basement studio. It's like, come on, man, I've been doing this for like 15 years. Get out of my way.
Well, yeah, so you're a pioneer.
Yeah.
So, I agree, and people are going to be really fed up with this, you know, in a few more weeks, and we might not be done.
Yeah. Yeah, people are going to – tensions are going to be raised, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Everybody will want to let the standards be relaxed, and the pressure is going to be immense on our leaders to do just that. And hopefully they won't get too over-anxious. It's one of those things that we need to do it long enough to break the chain of transmission to make sure it's really broken.
Right, exactly. That's what I worry about, too, that we're going to get to the point where we're an impatient people, Americans. So
yeah.
I think that we'll you can already kind of see it now here at the end of, like, what would be, like, the first week. I don't even know. It's hard to keep track of, like, I'm about to start, like, my fourth week of home quarantine here. So I haven't gone completely insane or anything like that, but it is getting irritating. I can only imagine what less – and I'm used to working from home, so I'm fairly used to this lifestyle. I can only imagine what people who are social creatures are experiencing. I'm sure they're very frustrated, but we have to hold tight here. We have to hold tight as long as we can. The other thing I was going to mention before we go, do you watch a lot of TV?
Yes.
Okay. Have you noticed this? This is like my super, super minor, banal pandemic pet peeve. And I think I didn't say this to you, but I was sort of musing about it when all this started really in earnest at the beginning of March. All the commercials were like the same. They were just as they had always been. And I'm like, oh, pretty soon you'll start seeing the coronavirus commercials. And now if you watch anything like in prime time, on any of the channels, really, the main times when they put on the main commercials, you know, NBC Nightly News or whatever, or the primetime shows on all the networks, all of the commercials have turned into these super depressing coronavirus-era commercials. Have you noticed this?
Not particularly, no.
You got... Pay attention to the commercials. Trust me, it's so depressing. The show will go to commercial, and then there'll be like this sad music, and it'll be like, "We know that you're having a hard time, and we're with you every step of the way here at Toyota." And it's like, if you have trouble paying your thing, call Toyota. It's like that, and then the next commercial will be like, you know, for Red Robin. And they'll be like, "We know you're stuck at home, but here's how to eat our burgers." And it's like, and it's just everything has transformed over into this quarantine world. You can't escape it. So at times I do. We talked about this before the show, where it's like, well, maybe the Benal of America listeners, maybe they don't want to hear any more coronavirus stuff. But this is essentially my therapy session for the week on all this. And hopefully, I know a few thousand of them have enjoyed the ride. So we'll be here next week because I think we're going to go through a really tough week. And I don't think it would be fair. We've come this far. We have to stick it out through this. You know what I'm saying? I'd feel bad if we just vanished here after what I think is going to be a really tough week. So we'll be back next week. I'll try and be as affable as I was this week, but that I may not be able to, but due to various circumstances. But we'll be back next week. And folks, just hang in there, man. We're going to get through this. This isn't going to last forever. It's gotten pretty bad. It's gotten pretty bad, and
yeah.
I didn't I mean, when we first met or talked 4 weeks ago and started this conversation, I had a feeling it was going to be bad, but I think, like, part of me was like, I've spent my whole adult life or a good portion of it listening to this rhetoric and this end of the world stuff, and it's like it never is as bad as they say it is, but so far it's been worse. So, like I said, I wouldn't feel right bailing now, so we'll come back next week and we'll try and lift people's spirits after what's going to be a very tough week. So now that I've talked to you for like 4 weeks, do I get some kind of course credit or anything for your work?
Absolutely. Yeah, you get a certificate of achievement.
Oh, good. I was gonna offer, if need be, to make one of those volcanoes. You know, I can make a volcano with the vinegar and the baking soda, so if that would help.
Wow.
This is a final exam.
Man of many talents.
Yes, I can pour. I can pour. That is indeed my God-given gift. All right, Tyler. Well, thank you so much, sir. I really do appreciate it. I've kind of made it a thing where I have a habit of going way past the marker, so I've tried not to do that here with our coronavirus conversations that we've had. So I will talk to you next week, man. Stay safe. Be safe. If I was a betting man, I can almost guarantee you I will still be in the same – I will not move out of this house for the next week. I've got all the provisions I need for the next 3 weeks. So hopefully I'll be ready to go next Friday night. So
well,
I can't thank you enough for being a part of this, brother.
Okay. Stay out of the gas station, though. That sounds dangerous.
Oh, no, I might write to the – I was thinking, like, as I was ranting about that tonight on the show, like, I should write to the company that owns that gas station and be like, do you know what you're doing? Like, for real? Can you do something about that? But
yeah.
Who knows? Maybe I will, and I'll report back next week on what happens when I contact the gas station company.
This is the social shaming part. I had a Amazon delivery. You know, I came up in their kind of gray truck.
And
was a young woman, and I did not pay any attention as to whether she had gloves on or not. But I'm sure those people are just being run ragged right now, and hopefully they'll be okay. You know, so
I wipe off my packages when they come. So I think
that's a good idea. You should do that, or leave them in the, if you have a garage. You know, leave them in the garage for a day. The cardboard.
That's what I was. Yeah, you can leave shit outside for a couple of days. That'll clean it off, right?
That will definitely help. But again, you know, always with food, you know, clean it.
Yeah.
Have an area that you've already pre-sterilized and wash the fruits and anything that's been handled. Put that into the sterile area.
I've seen the videos for that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good set of ideas to make sure that you give yourself the maximum chance of avoiding this thing, because it's sneaky.
Yeah, it certainly is. Like I said, I think I said this to you, where it's like, I don't know if I said it on the show or not at this point. We've talked so much, but there's a part of me that's like, if I get this, I said that. If I end up getting this, I'm going to be so pissed because I've done everything, damn near everything I could possibly can to avoid this. Short of that horrifying gas station visit, and I was practically in a bubble there. So I'd like to think that nothing went wrong there. But, you know, that would be the banal way. He died because he had to get that bag of combos. It turned out it was on the bag of combos that he bought. Jesus Christ.
Well, the main thing is that you have a perspective on what you need. Okay?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, if it's the end of the world, I ain't going without my combos. But, all right. On that note, thank you very much, Tyler. Thank you all to the folks who were listening, and we'll catch you next week. Hang tough. Gird your loins. Stay safe. We're going to get through this, and we're all in this together. Until next week, this is Tim et al. with Tyler Cokejohn.